Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. We have got so much to get through this week that we've decided to give the Mighty Murph a week off, another week off of well-earned rest before the Six Nations begin. And who better then to do this podcast with a man who comes alive at this time of year, like a national hunt racehorse getting ready for Cheltenham. It's Dan Killick ahead of the Six Nations. How are you, Dan?
Very good, Jed. Gavin Henson is back.
Dusting off the silver boots.
That's it. He's fit, ready, and raring to go.
The fake tan.
What a weekend.
The fake tan. Shave away, Killick. Shave away.
That's it. Hair on point. And Jed, if you're looking good, you play good. Yeah.
Mate, this is great. This is great chat. I'm going to bust that illusion for all the listeners because the pair of us look horrendous at the moment. You obviously haven't got that trademark gel in your hair, Dan, and you look like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber, and I haven't either as well. So God knows what. Lucky for everyone, this isn't a video podcast. Anyway, I've wasted a minute waffling about nonsense when we've actually got tons of rugby to get through. So first part of the show, we're going to talk about the regions in action over the weekend, which was very exciting. And lots to talk about. Very exciting, unless you're watching the Dragons game, of course. And then in the second part of the show, Dan and I are going to preview the Six Nations, including our predictions for winners, losers, wooden spoon, breakthrough player, star player, top try scorer, all that kind of stuff that I've recycled from last year's show. So yes, let's get stuck right into it, Dan. I know it's been another tough weekend for you on the rugby watching front. So are we going to throw this one over to you and you become the host for a minute, and I'll handle the rugby?
Yeah, let's go that way around then. Yeah,
where do you want to begin?
I think there's only one place to begin, and that has got to be Cardiff 29. Leinster 27.
Mate, woo-hoo-hoo. That honestly, I really did enjoy that game. Absolutely incredible. Looked like the atmosphere was buzzing down there. And look, this is what sport's all about, I think. Those, you know, that a game that goes right down to the wire and it's the last kick of the game to win it. Whatever happened, it was a really entertaining game of rugby. And the fact that Jared had the stones to step up and knock it over was just a really fitting end to a brilliant game. So I know obviously it's a Leinster side without all their internationals, but as we know, right, a Leinster third string could realistically make the semi-finals of this competition anyway. So I think it's a huge result for Cardiff, massive for Dai Young. Hopefully they'll be able to build on it. But yeah, some really big performances in there.
Yeah, I heard the forwards went exceptionally well. Who stood out for you?
Your forwards have got to go well against Leinster, haven't they? You know, we're talking about a Leinster side without internationals, but you've still got Devon Toner and Reece Ruddock and guys like this in there with bucket loads of experience. And you know, the pair of them are as hard as nails. But yeah, I mean, to a man, I thought the pack was really good. Will Boyd put in two huge turnovers. Mm. And again, I think that's really big, actually, because he's, you know, he's only featured in fits and starts this season, really. And so, you know, massive hats off to him. Turnbull put in another big shift.
How good is Turnbull?
Well, yeah, he's slid into the second row now as well. And I'll tell you what was
just exceptional play.
I'll tell you what was impressive. The scrummaging went well too. And, you know, big, again, whatever Leinster pack you're playing against, if you can get the scrum going well, then I think that's no mean feat. So yeah, big hats off to the front row. And I tell you a player who did impress me off the bench, Dan, as well, and you'll like that one. It's Sam Moore, who has had a time ravaged with injury. But whenever I've seen him play for either Cardiff or play for Cardiff, I've been impressed with him. And if he can stay injury free, he's a big handful. He came off the bench, played very well. But
he is. He's a big man, isn't he? And there was a lot of hype, wasn't there, before when he signed, and at the time which he signed, all the talk wasn't it, if he can stay fit and get himself fit. But yeah, I read that he was quality when he came on, just hoping and praying that he can get his fitness, isn't it?
Yeah.
I read that Dylan Lewis went very well as
well.
Yeah,
he was really good off the bench. Again, at the breakdown, as you'd expect, just an absolute handful. And he did a really, really good job. But won some crucial penalties in there. So, yeah, you can't fault that at all, actually. Do you know what? Who looked really good in the first half till he went off injured? And that was Rory Thornton. I thought he had a big first. And he looked bigger. He looked much, much bigger and more powerful than I'd seen him before. And he had a big game before he went off. But look, I think everyone to a man was excellent. But two players in the backs who stood out. Jared was quite rightly man of the match. Not just for that kick, but just, you know, moments of magic and setting up the first try. And that's the other guy who was so impressive was Owen Lane. And as Murph messaged us before we came on air, his exact words were, let's just get this up. Owen Lane's top quality finish took a huge steaming dump all over his squad omission. And yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, actually, because he, you know, for a player who's in the squad in the autumn, he's played pretty well since, and that showed what he's capable of. So yeah, fair play to him.
Yeah, I think if there's any injuries, he'll be in the back. The backfield, he'll be called up pretty quickly, won't he? Another great performance. I also saw that Alex Summerhill had a great game. And I know both me and you, we've never seen him have a bad game. He's a good player, isn't he? Really good player.
Yeah, we've said it a million times. You go back through any of these podcasts, and normally it's those dull Sundays, isn't it, Dan, when we're struggling to find something to talk about. And we'll just pick out, oh yeah, again, I'll have another good game for Cardiff. And yeah, he's just I just think he's a really, really handy player at this level. And he's quick, he's powerful, he's, you know, does the basics well. I'm a big fan of him, so it's good to see him. Yeah, good to see him getting recognised, I think.
Yeah, it's some great performances by boys that we needed to go well, didn't we? You know, Carey had a big performance, didn't he? Lewis and his Tash. Obviously, Jared's not known for his kicking, but slots that goal. Still, I was thinking he's probably sixth choice 10, isn't he?
Under Pivac. He's probably behind players who've retired now, I'd have thought.
Yeah, Patch will be ahead of him, wouldn't he, as well? And Domachowski, one of your big favourites, at a top game I read as well.
Well, mate, yeah, as I mentioned the scrum, and I just think he's so solid in there. You know, I don't know enough about scrummaging to go into any great detail, but whenever you
Do you want me to step in?
Yeah, you should field this one.
No. It's all made up, but...
But I just think he's got, you know, he's very, very consistent in that area. You don't often see him going backwards. And, yeah, I thought he added a lot in there. So, yeah, big performance for Cardiff. And hopefully they can string a few results together and finish the season well. But, yeah, it was an absolutely engaging game of rugby. Where do you want to head next?
Okay, let's head west. Let's head over to the Ospreys getting a cracking win, 23-19 against topside in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Now, I feel like we've been quite critical of the Ospreys in recent times. And, you know, obviously they rested a lot of players last week. But perhaps that did the trick. You know, them getting the result. There were some really soft tries that they conceded, but at the same time, it takes a lot of character to stick that behind you and come back and get a win. And while we're talking about people being overlooked for selection, I know I bang on about it all the time, but Reece Webb, man of the match. You know,
yeah.
you saw everything in that game that you want to see from Reece Webb. You know, the show and goes, the breaks, the quick tap pens, and I just don't get that he's not in one of the, you know, that he's not considered one of the best threes in available for selection. And, you know, I get it if you're not looking to, if you don't think he's going to make the next Rugby World Cup, which personally I think he could, if you don't want to pick him for that reason, all right, fine. But, you know, in the same token, you've got Reece Priestland, who's a year older than him, in there as fourth choice fly half. So all of a little bit baffling to me, but big win for them. Again, obviously it's an Edinburgh side without its internationals, but you've got to put away what's in front of you. And they did that. And, you know, as much as we've moaned a little bit, they're in sixth place in the league now, the Ospreys. So they've got an opportunity to put together a good end of the season. So fingers crossed that'll come. But they showed one of the bits that they showed on Scrum 5 tonight was a charge that I think it was Luke Morgan charged down one of the conversions. And A, you very, very rarely see that. But I think it is quite significant of perhaps the attitude that's exactly what you want to see. Mm. Someone who's going, right, if there is an opportunity to put this guy off and keep 2 points away, I'm going to bust a gut to get there. So, all in all, very, very encouraging performance for the Ospreys.
Yeah, that's sort of spirit that you touched upon there is probably absolutely spot on, because for them to fight back from 14-0 down, it's not easy to do, is it? And hopefully the Ospreys can kick on now, and it's exactly what we needed, isn't it? These two wins, yeah. big wins.
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, off the week, obviously last week we made a point of turning it into the Reasons to Be Cheerful podcast and trying to find a positive spin in things.
It's working, Jeff.
Well, it is, isn't it?
The boys are listening.
This is it. but look, I think with that, quickly, I think generally we just try and be realistic with it, don't we? You know, and when things are bad, they're not much fun. But I think, you know, you've got to enjoy a weekend like this. I don't think it cures all the ills of Welsh rugby, because we've had two wins and a draw in a week, you know, before the Six Nations when all the internationals are away. But I think you've got to say fair play to the sides who've got the win. So big chance for Cardiff and the Ospreys to kind of finish the season well.
Okay, let's head over to the Scarlets then. Getting apparently they played well, didn't they? Lost 27-15 over in Belfast. But what was your take on that game?
I think they're on the verge of a big performance. I think they're like a couple of weeks behind where Cardiff are. You know, Cardiff had that, like we said, you know, those the Dirty Dozen performances with the semi-pro players just prior to Christmas. They came back, they got a pummeling. I can't remember if it was Glasgow or Edinburgh now, but they got a pummeling in the at the hands of one of the Scottish sides, and then put in a big performance against Harlequins, and then got the win against Leinster. And I feel like there's one of those around the corner for Scarlets. I thought I was really impressed with them first half, and again, those little things about attitude Dane Blacker, who I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of. I know you've touted him for ages.
Yeah, I like
you?
Him. Yeah. Really, really sharp player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Quick, good decision maker.
Any thoughts on his tempo? Up in the tempo?
Oh, he's got he definitely takes it up on the tempo side, doesn't he? Fiery guy. Yeah, I like him, classy.
But yeah, I think he's great, and he does those, you know, I think he's a good threat around the fringes, and his service is decent, and you know, I every time I watch him I get more and more impressed. But actually what it was, you know, he played a crucial part in holding Ulster up over the line. And I think there was two instances where they held up an Ulster forward over the line. And those things are really, really big. You know, the scramble defence, and it would be very easy in a game like this when you've had the season that they've had to just roll over. And they certainly didn't. And were it not for an incident I'm sure we're going to come on to, things might have been a bit different.
Yeah. But anyone, just before we get to that incident that obviously we've got to talk about, anyone else stand out for you? I saw that Combier looked sharp, but didn't potentially get enough of the ball. Is that fair?
No, I think that's a spot on assessment. And I thought he was really good the week before against Bristol. Actually, I think look, he's probably reached what is he now? Maybe like 23. You know, he was really, really highly touted when he was in the under 20s. Perhaps hasn't played as much rugby for Scarlets as we'd have liked, but he's making some headway now. And I think that there's quite a few players in this side who I think Peel has honed in on and said, you've got an opportunity to be a really useful player for me. You know, Combe obviously was a youngster, but you know, was largely a fringe player beforehand. Dav Hughes captained the side at the weekend, the hooker. I mean, I've barely seen him play. And so big hats off to him. The open side, Sean Evans, again, another player who didn't feature a great deal before, but I don't think he's a spring chicken. I think he's been knocking around playing for Llanelli RFC for quite some time. So I think there's some of these players that that Peel has taken a look at and said, look, you've got an opportunity here to be a part of this squad. And I think they've kind of impressed when they've been given the opportunity. So Samson Lee was another one, mate. Really good to see Samson Lee have a big game. He bundled over from 4 inches to score a try. But again, you know, he was busy throughout the game. And it's worth noting, the Scarlets had two opportunities where they had 2-on-1s and they didn't execute them. And, you know, again, I think those things will come. They're a side who've only played 8 or 9 games this season. So for the first time this season, I've really kind of thought, well, not the first time, after last week, which I know sounds weird because they shipped 50 points, but I think they're moving in the right direction. I can kind of see what the blueprint is from Peel now. So again, if they build on it, maybe there's loads of reasons to be cheerful going into the end of the season.
Well, yeah, there certainly is. Certainly is after this weekend, isn't there?
And now back to earth with a bump.
Well, it was a bump, wasn't it? Talk us through it.
Oh, mate. So this is the Tom Rogers, Craig Gilroy incident in the first half. Again, I'm guessing you've seen the footage on social media, or whatever.
A number of times.
It looks horrendous because it is. It's a shoulder to the head. They said on commentary, I think it was Shanklin and... Oh yeah, you're like this. So the commentary team was Shanklin and the rather unbiased duo of Mark Robson and Stephen Ferris. Those two commentating on an Ulster game. And everyone kind of seemed to have the opinion that yes, it looked horrendous, but by the letter of the law, it's a yellow because he's dipping and there's mitigating circumstances. Now, if that is the case, we've got to look at this law because it's just not right. Like, these are the ones that 12 months ago were getting punished. They were getting punished because it's a shoulder to the head. You've seen what it's done to his neck. It's snapped right back. This is the stuff you've got to get rid of. And that's what it's there for. So I don't think there's any malice from Gilroy. I do think it's reckless. He smashed him in the head. That's it. He's got to go. Now, I just think that that's the thing. Whether it's a directive, whether it's a redefinition of the law, whatever happened on Saturday needs to be shown to world rugby or to the, you know, to the refereeing panels and saying, look, this is the stuff that we've got to get rid of, because if it doesn't do that, then you've got a really big opportunity to reduce the risk of head injuries. It was a shocker. So I mean, I just think those have to be red cards. They have to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. It had to be a red, didn't it? It was awful to watch just once, you know, let alone a number of times. It looked like his, you know, his neck was, yeah, was almost going to snap. That's, I mean, horrendous. It's terrible. And it was, I know Rogers was dipping, his knee, you know, his body was definitely coming down, but it was absolutely reckless from Gilroy, and you can't be reckless.
And that's what I mean. Just, this grey area that they've got to get rid of. If it's reckless into the head, then it's got to be red for me. And that's it. Yeah. You know, if that's not the exact interpretation, you've just got to get rid of that. And I felt like we were getting to that position where players were adjusting the way they were tackling in order to avoid the head collision stuff. And it feels like it's gone back now. And the kind of the benefit of doubt is with the defender, which, again, I don't think it was any malice in it, but these are the ones you've just got to get rid of.
Yeah. But then, you know, when you think of sort of malice, and, you know, if something is reckless and you know, if you're not going to look, or you're going to cause serious injury. So I don't think there's any real difference, really, to be honest. If you're going to close your eyes and stand, you know, and you know, potentially seriously injure someone, then it's almost the same.
Yeah.
Really. A lot of people probably argue against that, but I don't know. The outcome can be the same, can't it? If not worse sometimes. So straight red.
Yeah,
terrible decision.
Well, yeah, I agree. And he's got Jaco Pyper, who's got Wales Ireland next week. So we'll see whether there's any impact on that. But let's just quickly finish the first part of the show by talking about the Dragons. And I do mean quickly, because we've done a good job of trying to be optimistic in this first half, Dan. They did get a share of the spoils. It was a draw after all, but the first half performance was pretty awful. There's a lot of unhappy Dragons fans out there at the moment.
Yeah, it's pretty tough for the Dragons at the moment, isn't it? I know you're obviously a big fan, and we were saying off air, weren't we, that the Dragons were playing, you know, were playing some really good rugby, I think early on. You know, early on into the season, and they've entered a pretty tough time at the moment. To put a positive spin on it, though, Ross Moriarty back, he went well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He was really good. He was really good. I think, did exactly what you expect from him. He's abrasive, carried well, scored a try. There was they chucked him up for a line out intercept on our own 5 meter line as well, which was a really big, you know, it was a really big plus. It's all very, very encouraging. I think Pivak will be very tempted to pick him, whether or not I would or not. I'm not entirely convinced yet, just based on having enough match practice. But you're right, that was definitely the positive for the game.
Yeah, I think they'll be extremely tempted to play him, won't they, against a physical island pack. But I'm with you. I don't know whether that's right or not. But yeah, we're going to touch on it on the Elliot D sending off, or it is what it is.
Well, I think it was pretty clear, straightforward. Yeah. You know, straightforward red. And this is what I mean. I just think it's one of those that if you go in, you make contact to the head, you know you're dealing with trouble, and that's what I think I would have liked to have seen in the Ulster game. But yeah, it was a clear red. It very nearly cost the Dragons the game. Could you have said the Dragons deserved to lose that game? Yes, but they didn't. They did manage to just about grind out a draw. It was very weird, actually, the way the game ended. You know, Sam Davis with a crossfield kick from our own 5 metre line to try and run it and win it. It would have been a very different spin if they'd have managed to score from there. It would have put a big spin on it. If I'm honest, I didn't really mind that, because if we'd have lost off the back of trying to run off our own line once, I kind of just think, you know, what use is a draw to the Dragons, really, when they've only won one game all season? So it kind of didn't bother me that much. But then once we'd conceded the penalty, they then tried to run it again and were lucky to get out of jail there. So, yeah, I mean, look, they just got to start winning games soon. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, yeah, some really tough conversations ahead. I've seen a lot of people kind of calling for Dean Ryan's head. If I'm honest, I don't think that's going to help us in the short term. I don't see what the other options are. I'd probably prefer to see him get more, you know, have someone come in and help with more of the hands-on coaching and him do more of a director of rugby role in its truest sense. But yeah, it's, yeah, pretty grim, mate. But let's leave it there for the club rugby. Take a quick break and we'll come back. And just enough time, Dan, for you to nip off and get yourself a cup of So Coffee, our proud sponsors. And we'll be back in the second half to talk Six Nations. Right, time then to talk Six Nations, Dan. Let's let you off your leash. Your Gavin Henson, silver boots are all laced up and ready to go. Right, how I thought we'd do this is the same as we did on last year's preview episode, and that is that we'll get each of us to pick the winners of the tournament, who's going to get the wooden spoon, the player of the tournament, top try scorer, breakthrough player, and in a new addition this year, the non-Welsh player you're most excited to see, with the exception of Anton Dupont, who you're simply not allowed to pick.
Because
we all would have picked him. for that yes. Very reason, Dan. That is indeed the joke. Right,
lovely.
Let's start with winners. Do you know what? I actually think this is the toughest question of the lot.
I agree with you, yeah. It's really tricky, isn't it? I wonder if me and you, I know who you usually go for in this. So I might take that team off you this year.
Go on. Do it.
I think England this year.
Well, as you know, I think I predicted them with a Grand Slam last year and they finished fifth. So the temptation was to do it again. What makes you What makes you think they're going to be the real deal this year?
I think the way the fixtures lie are quite kind for them, quite favourable. And I just think that they've got a lot of players that they're picking now that are in form. It's quite difficult to know exactly what they're going to bring in the backs as well. I think partly that might, you know, that might affect them as well in a way, you know, with the 10 situation. And obviously Farrell being out early on, will that rock them? Will it make them better? You know, Eddie Jones loves him, doesn't he? He loves playing him. He plays all the games for him. And I just have a sneaky feeling, though, that without him there, they could be absolutely incredible, couldn't they? At some point, it's got to click. You know, we've said it for years. I mean, they've underperformed in the tournament for so many years now, you know. And at some point, they've got to click. And I think that, you know, they've got just quality all over the park now. And with Marcus Smith at 10, anything can happen.
Okay, to that point, Eddie Jones made a big point about saying, you know, Farrell's the captain and Marcus Smith is, you know, he plays so much better when he's got a player like Farrell outside him, and this is definitely going to be the axis. He's then subsequently lost Farrell. Does it kind of say that he hasn't quite got the trust? He's a bit worried about Smith's lack of experience. And I tell you, the other thing that's coupled with that is that's the bit for me that I think is England's weakness, is that 10, 12, 13. Without Farrell, I know he gets a lot of stick, Farrell, but you know, he's got bags of experience and he does bring with him that kind of steady head. So without him and without Manu Tuilagi, it becomes a very uncertain midfield.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the midfield they've got to get right, haven't they? They don't. You speak to a number of English people, they don't know what the centre partnership is. They all come out with something quite different. You know, if Manu's fit, he plays. And that's every single time, isn't it? If he's fit, he plays. And Farrell as well. A lot of English fans wouldn't start him, would they? But Eddie Jones does, you know, and absolutely rates him. And all the players that play with him say he's so, so integral to the setup. The, you know, just the what he brings to training, all those other things, which does, you know, make you think, is there something deeper in that? Like, where are the other players to take a bit of that away? You know, Ford's one of those players, isn't he? But then he, you know, then it was going to be Marcus at 10. Well,
Ford wasn't Farrell in the squad until Farrell. Exactly. It would be a remarkable promotion to then find himself in the match day 23.
A lot does ride on their centre partnership, doesn't it? Their pack will go well, won't it? You know, that's pretty much a given. I do think they've got, it'd be interesting to see how the back row gels.
Yeah, I mean, either Itoje or Laws is going to play in the back row, aren't they? Because if you look at the other back rows they've named, Alfie Barberi, who I'm a massive fan of, by the way, I think he's an excellent player, converted hooker, but a real explosive ball carrier. He's in there. Tom Curry's obviously in there. Then you've got Dom Brandt, Lewis Ludlam and Sam Simmons. Now, there's not a lot of caps between them. Obviously, Curry's very experienced. There's not a lot of caps between them. I can definitely see Laws or Itoje playing in the back row. And I don't know, for some reason, I just think that might be a weakness. So for that and the centre partnerships, I'm not going to go for England this year. But you seem pretty sold on this, don't you?
Well, it's yes, 1 minute, and then I talk myself out of it. You know, in the next conversation, I think that they're, if it gels for them, and with the way in which the fixtures work for them, they can get a win in Murrayfield. I think it's on for them, and of course how they all gel together. But there's a good number of ifs in there, aren't there? Who've you got down as your top team to win it?
I was really torn between France and Ireland, if I'm honest, and I think it just comes down to me to the fact that France have got Ireland at home, and I think that'll be just enough for them to I think I'm right in saying that. Round two, France, Ireland in Paris. I mean, look, France, we saw what they're capable of. I just think they've now got that discipline alongside the flair, and they've got the best crop of players that they've had in the professional era. So for me, I think they are going to put it together. They are due a big performance. You know, when did they last win the Six Nations? Been 2010, 2009, 2010 it was, I think.
Yeah.
They're due one. I think Edwards is having a massive impact there. I think all the players are kind of bought into the system. I think that they've just got an absurd amount of talent. And to go back to that centre point that you were making that we were talking about for England, I think France have got just an incredible 10, 12, 13 if they go with Ntamack, Vakatawa and Fiku. And I think that's just, you know, there is so much ability in there. You know, we know Vakatawa is a wrecking ball. He's got brilliant hands. He spots a gap brilliantly. Fiku's this, you know, I think he's
class.
He is class. Quality. And I think, you know, like, obviously we know he's a great finisher and he runs lovely lines and stuff like that. But I think defensively he's been so important to them. And Edward, you know, we know what Edwards is like for having a 13 who he can absolutely rely on. And, you know, Jonathan Davis was that for him for so many years, his kind of defence leader. I think Fiku is that for France. And for me, that's where I think they'll have the edge over Ireland and England. That's the other thing, is they've got England in Paris this year because they have a terrible record at Twickenham. And I think that's what makes a difference. So I know it's not the most original to say that France are going to do it, but I think they are, and I think it's going to be a slam with the very last game of the tournament against England at 8 p.m. on the Saturday night.
Oh, wow! I mean, not that I want it to go to that, as you don't, but it would be quite some ending, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, whatever happens is a good game to bring the tournament down with.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be quite strong, very strong, aren't they? They've got a settled side now, haven't they?
Yeah, I think that's more,
you know, more settled than we've known for years and years, and that's going to count when you look around at the other sides. They're not as settled, are they?
No, so, they're not. Quick word for Scotland in this, and obviously they've we still seem to think they're moving in the right direction. Any realistic opportunity to win this one?
Not for me. I mean, they've definitely got a stronger squad, haven't they? And I think they'll be difficult, very difficult to beat at home. You know, they'll really target those home games, won't they? But you know, they've still got I still think it'll be difficult for them going away from home, but you never know, do you? They have got, when you look at the squad now, it's packed with quality, isn't it? It's significantly stronger than we've seen it before. So could it be Scotland's year? Possibly.
I mean, I think if this was another year, you know, if this had been like 10 years ago or 12 years ago or something, you know, take that season where we were just talking about where France won it in 2010 and Scotland had this kind of side, I think they'd be bang in the mix, you know. Wales had an off year that season. England were, England were kind of up and down. France managed to piece it together. Ireland didn't have a particularly good season. You know, it's just the fact that so many of these sides have got so much stronger over the last 18 months, and that I think that's, you know, it's testament to Scotland that they've kind of kept up with that progression. It could all change if they could beat England in that first game. They've beaten them at Murrayfield, four years ago, wasn't it? They beat them there, and then they ended up drawing in that mad game at Twickenham a year later. They beat England at Twickenham last year, but it was in front of an empty house, which I just don't think is the same thing. But if they could get a result there and catch England cold, then there could be some momentum in it.
Then we haven't mentioned Wales.
We haven't, mate. What do you think? surely there's too many injuries to mount a title challenge this time around.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've got to be realistic, haven't we? And there's just, you know, the worry is when we pick up a couple of injuries, which is almost inevitable, isn't it? Really. In this day and age, and I think it's going to be a tough Six Nations for us. That being said, we do tend to rise for the tournaments, don't we? You know, I was speaking to a friend earlier that's English, and you know, he said you can never, you know, you'd never rule out Wales because they tend to come together, gel, and pull out. If it's not performances, it's wins, which is true, isn't it? We're there or thereabouts quite often, but I think this year it'll be tough for us.
Yeah, I think look, you've got to start well in this tournament, really, to mount a challenge, and it's such a tough outing first up, away at Ireland, yeah, with no Ken Owens, no Alan Wynn, potentially Moriarty, but you know, no Tipperick. There's so much experience missing there that I think you've got to be worried about it, because Ireland away, we've not won there since 2012. They've got such a big pack, and you know, even you know, you look at our back row, which is good, and there are some fantastic options in there and players that I really like, but like we said last week, it is a bit lightweight, and then you couple that with all the players are missing. I just think it's such a tough opening fixture that it's going to be difficult thereafter.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of it comes down to how you perform, doesn't it, in the first game. And just going to Ireland is such a difficult place for us, isn't it? And the nuts and bolts of the game are always so important over there, aren't they? Against other sides, you know, even, you know, you throw England in there, you know, if you can get a win against them of course it's difficult, but if your line out falters and your scrum falters, there are ways around. But in Ireland, there isn't. And that's the concern, isn't it? So yeah, good point. You know, with Ireland first up, it's going to be very tough for Wales.
Yeah, it is, and that's why I can't see. I just think that, and also I just feel like we used up all our luck last year. You know, I feel like it's not to take anything away, but I think you have to look at that championship with a degree of, you know, ultimately going into this, we are the holders, but I think you have to look at it with a degree of, if not cynicism, just a bit of reality that, it was played in front of empty houses, and we had players sent off in all the key fixtures or got very, very fortunate refereeing decisions, with the exception of France, and they were the ones that put pay to it. So, yeah, for me, I just feel like this is going to be back to earth with a bump and a really tough campaign without some of your most experienced figures in there.
Yeah, it is. On the flip side, though, to put a positive spin on it, which I've got to do, it's in my DNA, isn't it? If we get the win over there, imagine what that's going to do for this squad that's coming together. There's a lot of youth in. There's a lot of youth in there. Bigger as captain. I wouldn't rule us out then, you know. Look, you think as well how we got the wins last time out as well, by, you could say, okay, great, you know, great discipline, forcing penalties, forcing other sides to give, you know, to give away yellows, to give away reds. They don't come about by sort of chance or luck, they, over and over again, albeit it was pretty peculiar. maybe I'm clutching at straws there. If we can get that win over there, the boys would be so, so confident, won't they, moving forward, because they'd know no different.
Look, even if Ireland have a man sent off after 17 minutes and we get the win over there, I will hold my hands up and say, fair play, that is a massive result. I won't caveat it with, there's a cue something mad happening, but look, if something mad happens to me and we get the win, then so be it. But yeah, look, I think it's just too big an ask, I think, for Wales. Right, let's have a look at Wooden Spoon. Hopefully, obviously we haven't mentioned Italy yet. Is this the point where we both agree that Italy are going to get the Wooden Spoon?
Yes. Italy for the Wooden Spoon? I'd like them not to get it.
Yeah. Well, I would and I wouldn't, because I'd have a horrible, horrible feeling it might be us then. I suppose Kieran Crowley being involved now, I think is going to take them in the right direction. I feel like that's a good appointment. I just think that like we've said, all the other sides have got so much better that it's going to be even tougher for Italy this year than it has been in previous seasons. So yeah, if I'm honest, I feel like it's just going to be a step too far. And you know, look, I think, again, there's some injuries. I think Pelledri's injured again, which, you know, a player like that just gives you that bit of class, that bit of, I think he's a player who's got the ability to be a top-class international. And I think just missing him is, he's really, really big. But, yeah, I don't know, I can't see past them unless, you know, and I know I said this last year and we won the championship, unless we're in such a bad position going into that final game that, the Italy turn up, because they don't have fear of Wales, you know, they don't. It's not like if they were going into England in the last game, because they don't beat England, but they know that if everything went right and everything went wrong for us, they could beat us, because they have done it in the past, admittedly not for years, but there isn't that psychological thing of this is Wales, it's too big a thing for us to do. So that would be the only scenario I could see them not getting the not getting the spoon.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, but I think almost, you know, it feels now that they're a good way behind the other sides.
Yeah, I think they are,
you know, more than maybe other years. Of course, you know, it's tournament rugby, isn't it? So, you know, everyone's going to raise their game. But I think I would say, you know, well, everyone pretty much, without exception, would have them down as wooden spoon holders, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't think it helps that Zebra are, you know, such a poor outfit now as well. Because at least at points when they were competitive and Benetton were, you know, were good, you had that basis at club level. But the squad is pretty much all Benetton players, you know, with a couple of foreign imports and the odd Zebra player thrown into the mix. So I think, yeah. I don't think that helps massively, to be honest. So yeah, it's going to be another difficult campaign for Italy, I think. Right, let's move on, Dan. Player of the tournament, who's it going to be? I can't wait to hear your pick on this one.
Who am I going for? Player of the tournament. Who do I want it to be? Who do I think it will be?
Who do you think it will be, Dan?
I have a feeling it will be Dom Brandt.
Do you? Big shout, that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Been talked about for a long, long time, hasn't he? And getting in into the England setup, and he's in there now. I just think he's just going to take it.
Will Eddie definitely pick him at eight? There's Sam Simmons in there as well. Yeah, well, yeah.
No,
with all this, he'll probably pick Curry at eight.
Yeah, probably. And yeah, absolutely could well do. But I think if he gets on the pitch, he's got so much quality, hasn't he? Scores tries for fun. He's in the form of his life. I really do think that it could be the tournament for him.
That's it. Yeah, it's a bold call, that one. I like it. I suppose if you've picked England to win it, then you kind of have to pick someone from within that squad to be the player of the tournament. Dom Brandt, yeah. Interesting shout.
Can you see that then?
Yeah, I actually had him down as my breakthrough player. I thought I could see him, like, you know, something mad, like him not starting against Scotland and then playing the next four games and putting in some really big performances. Something like that happening. But I had him as my breakthrough player. I'm a big fan. I think he's, you know, he carries really well. He's got good link-up play. Like you say, he knows where the try line is. He's such a handful at number eight. He's a proper, proper number eight, I would say. And, you know...
He's got it all at number eight as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And I think that's, you know, that's something that has held England back at points, you know, when they've either not had Vunipola because he's been injured or they've picked him when he was out of form. I think that had been difficult. And, you know, Dom Brandt is such a difficult man to keep quiet. I think he's set for a big tournament.
Agreed. So have you gone for them?
Well, am I allowed to say Antoine Dupont or not?
I don't think you're allowed, no.
It's just simply one of those things, isn't it? We're not allowed to say that Dupont is either going to be player of the tournament or... got to take it as given, haven't we? That he's that good that it's a cliche to even pick him. With that in mind, then, I am going to go for someone who we mentioned earlier. And where am I? Right, I think it's got to be a French player. Given that I think they're going to win it and I think they're going to slam it, I'm going to go with Gael Ficou for that reason. That reason
I had a feeling. Yeah,
I was. Yeah, I was a little bit torn. Then I was like, right, do I pick one? Do I pick one of the forwards? Because again, I think they're going to cause. They're such a big, and dynamic unit that they're going to cause a lot of trouble. But yeah, I'm going to go Gael Ficou. All those reasons that we said earlier, I think this is it. France, to get it together and do a Grand Slam against sides as good as this, they're going to need to be organised. It's not like they can just do the champagne rugby stuff. And I think that Fico adds a great deal to that alongside the great finishing and the good footballing skills. So, Gael Fiku for me. I think you'd probably get good odds on that. But he's in for a massive tournament, I think.
Yeah, good selection. Liked him a lot. Really good player.
Good stuff. Right, brings us on to breakthrough player. Top try scorer next.
Top try scorer. So I'm going to bring that back to Wales, okay? I am going to go with Louis Rees-Sammet. And did you see his try this weekend?
Yes, I did.
I mean, all you can do is smile. It is a thing of beauty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like he's really got going either, in it.
I feel that every time I watch him, it doesn't look like he's got going yet.
He's so fast, isn't he?
Absolutely rapid.
Great try. So I think he'll start. We've got to get the ball in his hands. You know, because he'll start, I can't see the shirt coming away from him. And let's just get the ball in his hands and cause some damage. And he's a handful too, because he is so quick. When he does step or move or even run direct, he's a really useful unit, isn't he? In the tight channels as well. Let's get him on the ball.
Yeah, well, that's a decent shout. I mean,
Louis Rees-Sammet.
My concern is how many tries are we going to score in this tournament? Is my major concern. Apologies for being a bit pessimistic on it, but I think it's a tough fixture run. For me, I don't know. Again, I was thinking about doing Van der Merwe, just because I think so much of what Scotland do ends up with him getting the ball in his hands. And again, I could see him running riot against Italy. You know, he gets four tries against Italy. He could very easily get one or two against England. They're such a free-flowing side, Scotland, that, yeah, no, there we go. I've said it. Duane van der Merwe for me.
Yeah. Good pick.
It changes it slightly from just picking all French players, doesn't it? So, for me, I'm going to go for Duane van der Merwe.
Okay.
Okay, which leaves breakthrough player, Dan. So I've already said I've gone for Dom Brandt, so I think we've covered that. Who's the breakthrough player you're going for?
So, a bit of a theme on my side. He plays for England. He plays for Harlequins.
Yeah.
So a nice link up with Dom Brandt. He actually came from the same UIC as well with Dom Brandt. It's Luke Northmore.
Yeah, interesting.
Who's got a call up now, hasn't he? Can play centre or wing. I think he's a really, really good player, and I'd like to see him as a rugby fan then be given a go. And I think, like we touched upon earlier, in that centre, the centre position for England is open. I don't think they really know what they're going to do.
It's up for grabs, isn't it? I mean, look, the only specialist centres in the squad are him, Marchant, who again, can play on the wing as well. Then you've got Slade, who obviously has played rugby elsewhere, but the bulk of it has been in the centre. And then Atkinson, who is, obviously playing very well, and in the last couple of seasons has been very, very good. But he's been around the block a bit. He's got a handful of caps at the age of 31. So, look, I think there's every chance that the Harlequins boys are going to go well in this tournament. I think that's a pretty shrewd pick, to be honest, Dan.
Yeah. Something a little bit different, and just maybe keeps me a little bit more interested in the English side, Jed, than I would be otherwise, if that's possibly allowed.
Oh man, there's always interest when England are playing, because our second team is playing against them. Whoever that might be.
Exactly.
all right. Well, that was a good shout there, Dan. And then finally, the player you're most excited about watching, who's not Welsh and isn't Anton Dupont.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm really allowed to say this guy, really.
Another Englishman.
But I am going to have to say, yeah, it's a theme. It's Marcus Smith.
Okay, jeez, mate. You're making us sound like the Five Live podcast here with this pro Harlequins, pro English chat.
Yeah, I know. It's a rarity for me, but he's annoyingly good, isn't he? He is quite annoying, I think, as well. Or certainly comes across that way to me. But like, you can't not be excited by seeing him play, can you? What's going to happen? It's a box of tricks. He's up to all sorts. He's box office, isn't he? You have to watch the TV closely when he's got the ball just to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
And I think it's great for rugby as well that there's another like real genuine rugby footballer at 10 for England.
Well, I mean, that's a very diplomatic way of putting it, Dan. The thought of England having a genuine footballing 10 terrifies me, actually. But it's not often that we've really seen that. You know, I suppose Ford has been the incumbent, and look, of course, he is a footballer.
No, he is, yeah, and he's in phenomenal form, isn't he?
He is in phenomenal form, but you know, I've always said that I don't ever think that he's reached the level, perhaps, that his ability. And that's really harsh to say, isn't it, for a guy with 80 odd caps, but. You know, he's been overlooked for whatever it is, two or three Lions tours. And I think that, you know, in the latter part of his international career, they've ended up picking Farrell at 10 and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's been a long time really since England had a proper running 10 that, you know, that could be the real deal. And, he's going to be an exciting one to watch, but, Yeah, definitely a theme running through your predictions, Dan.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, also though, he can be targeted as well, can't he? And he will be. There's no two ways about that. So, every side, to be honest, will target him, and they'll be coming right down his channel, put the big boys down there, rough him up, and again because England don't really know what they're going to do in the centre. In the centres as well, it could potentially be hard for him in that with the Harlequins guys, they all, you know, the eight, you know, 8, 9, 10, well, all across the park, they all know what they're doing. They're all completely in sync. And this will be different, very different.
I tell you what will also be different as well is he hasn't got the big South African Oosterhuizen, playing outside him, who is, you know, just
such a reassuring presence.
You know, he's pretty much got the lot. He's just one of those really robust centres who, again, if you're a 10, you'd love to have playing outside you. So I think with England having an unsettled centre partnership, that might be a bit trickier for them. So, you know, while I'm a massive admirer of his abilities, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think all the opposition sides will be targeting him. Not that he's a bad player, but because he's inexperienced and there's an awful lot riding on him. So yeah, we'll see what happens. And for that reason, Dan, I'm going for Finn Russell.
You love Finn Russell.
Love Finn Russell, yeah. We all love him. He just plays rugby the way that it should be played. Well, yeah, it is, mate. You know, he's absurdly fun to watch. You know, whether it's good or it's bad, I never have a bad time when Finn Russell is on the pitch. Unless, of course, he's tearing Wales to shreds. But I'm hoping he's got some big performances up his sleeve, and it'd be nice if he's got a big one up his sleeve in that Calcutta Cup game in the opening weekend.
Yeah, God, we picked some different. Some different players, some very exciting players.
I nearly went for one of these two, for either breakthrough or for player I'm most looking forward to. And for Ben Vellacott, who I think will probably be on the bench for Scotland, I would have thought. Obviously, Ali/Tommy Price offers has a lot of experience. I think he'll grow from having those Lions caps as well. But Vellacott has impressed me so much, and for Edinburgh. And I just think, again, bringing him off the bench, you know, if you've managed to marshal, you know, Russell and the pace that they play with in their backs, if you've kept them quiet for 55, 60 minutes, and then Vellacott comes on to quote you, Dan, up the tempo, I think you could have a really big role to play for Scotland. So I was toying with him in both those, breakthrough and player I'm most excited to watch. But have gone for Finn Russell in the end. Right, Dan, we've got a couple of minutes left before the end of the show. We should probably select our team for next week. Despite there being lots of injury problems, do you think it's a relatively straightforward side to pick?
I think it gets a little bit interesting in the back row.
Okay.
Front row, second row, yeah. Okay. Backs, yes.
Okay, right. Front row then. Wynne Jones, Tom Francis props, and then Elias Hooker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like we said last week, I would be tempted to have a look at Bradley Roberts / Brendan Rodgers. but yeah, I think it will be Elias. And again, you probably... Given the injury situation, that's probably hard to disagree with. But it's gonna be a big test of the line out as a unit over there. You know what it's like in no matter what stage Ireland are at, they've always had a strong line out. So that's gonna be a very, very difficult one. And coupled with that, then, so second rows, Adam Beard and Will Romans.
Yeah, although Seb Davis has been mentioned in a good few quarters, isn't he?
What would you go with?
But I'd go with Will Rowlands, the bigger man.
Yeah, I think you're going to need you're going to need some ball carries. Yeah, it's exactly that, the bigger man. I'd go with it there.
Yeah.
Right, back row, you say gets interesting.
Yeah, I think it does. It does get interesting now with Moriarty playing well on the weekend. Does he come straight back in? Hard man. You know, we need somebody. You know, do we need that hard guy over in Ireland? If it's another side, maybe we're not talking like this. But does Moriarty come in? Where does Ellis Jenkins play? Does he play six? Does he play seven? Does he play eight? Tame Basham, Wainwright, Jack Morgan. There's quite a few options, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. I completely get your point about Moriarty, because you need it's going to be such a physical encounter that obviously he brings that he brings that in abundance, and it's very, very tempting to go with him. And
it is, yeah. He says he's fine as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's actually, you know, saying his body's fine. What else can he really say, I suppose? But maybe he wouldn't be talking as boldly as he is. Because he's come out so confidently and talked like that, for me, he's, again, against Ireland, and you know they're going to bring that nickel and everything else. I he needs to be in the back row for me.
You're talking me round here, actually. I was really impressed with him on Friday night, but at the same time, part of me was just going, this is against Benetton for the Dragons. You know, 60 minutes here does not prepare. Maybe he played a little longer, actually, but this does not prepare you for Ireland away in the Six Nations.
But
the only counter argument I would say is, look, if you try and fight. Yes, I agree with it, that we need big men in that pack. But what you don't want to do is try and play a similar kind of game plan to Ireland. And maybe, I don't know, is there an argument for having twin fetchers in the back row to kind of try and nullify and just slow things down and win penalties at the breakdown and then get field possession, you know, territory and field position that way.
Yeah, there is an argument for that. I just think, you know, with the, you know, that the Ireland drone swelling, you know, sort of coming round in the stadium there, cold, just you turn around and you see Moriarty there with that face, mm-hmm. and you know you're just looking at him and you're pleading for him to level someone. It must just give you such a lift. And then maybe we bring on another fetcher and maybe cause a little bit of mayhem when it's, you know, after 50, Moriarty's emptied the tank. Big 50 minutes from him, given everything.
Okay. I think the one who, for me, who definitely starts is Wainwright.
Okay.
I think if you're going to start Ross, you'd start him. Look, Wainwright is only an 8 now, in my eyes. And credit to Pivac. I think that's his, you know, that was obviously his brainchild. But the more I see it, the more I like it and think, you know, he's an athletic 8. So let's go with that. I think...
Because you could have... Wainwright could miss out if you picked Ellis at 8.
Well, you wouldn't pick Ellis at 8, though, would you? You'd pick Ross at 8 and Ellis at 6 and Basham or Morgan at 7.
Yeah, much more conventional, yeah.
All right, I would go... You've convinced me on the Moriarty one. I would go Moriarty, Wainwright, Basham, which sounds mad going in all Dragons back row given the season that they've had. But I just think that would be the best lineup. What about you? What would you go with?
I do like that. You know, I do like that that back row. It's gone well before. They know each other. And a big part of the back row, isn't it, is getting the balance right. Mm. And I quite like that. I think there's an argument for, you know, an argument for Moriarty. You know, could Moriarty go 8 with Ellis Jenkins at 6, Basham at 7.
Go on, Dan. I'm going to let you have this call. What happens next? Not what Pivac does, but if this is our squad, you get to choose the 6, 7, 8. Who is it?
I'd go with the Dragons back row.
Okay.
For continuity, and linking up then with Will Rowlands in the second row.
It just sounds a bit mad when you're talking about it, doesn't it? You know, we've said in the first half what a poor season the Dragons have had, and then we picked 4 of them in the pack. But they're all really good players. So yeah, you know, I think you can make that argument. Right, Thomas Williams, scrum half.
Thomas Williams, scrum half. Yeah.
Dan Vega, fly half.
Agreed.
Centres.
Oh, are we going to have the same? Okay. Do you want mine first?
Yep.
Owen Watkin, 12.
Interesting. Then?
Owen Watkin, 12. JD.
I'm going with John Fox in at 13. And I'm going Halaholo at 12. But I like Watkin. I like Watkin. You're right. I'll have it. I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Halaholo off the bench?
Halaholo off the bench. Yeah.
Oh, I do like that.
I just think, you know, like I said before, what Watkin does defensively in the strips, and I think he's been in good form this season. I don't think Pivac will go with that, but Watkin and John Fox would be, I'd be quite happy to see that.
Great. Yep.
And then I think the back three picks itself, doesn't it? Josh Adams, Lewis Rees-Summit and Liam Williams.
For me it does, mm-hmm. Yeah. But McNichol?
No, who do you pick him over? None of them. I think he had a good autumn and he's been playing very well, but I don't think you pick him over either of those three, do you? Liam is your one true world-class player in the, you know, in the back line, well, in the, sorry, in the back three.
He is, but it's like we mentioned the other week though, isn't it? If you know, when we look at offloads and, you know, offloads that McNichol gives, passes that McNichol gives, Liam doesn't, you know, Liam's unbelievable, isn't he? But very different player.
Sexton at some point is going to be raining down the bombs, and I want Liam underneath it. Straightforward for me, that one.
Would there be Would there be a case to maybe put McNichol on one of the wings?
No.
No.
Over who?
Well, I wouldn't do it, but...
Yeah. No, I just think... Look,
Zamit, maybe.
Zamit is your X-Factor player who's got just the bags of pace. And if something, you know, a missed pass goes awry and he ends up running in from 60 yards, that could be the game-changing moment that, you know, that keeps you in the... or gets you back in the fixture or wins it for you. So, you know, he has to play in there. Josh Adams is an absolute class performer. So, no, that back three for me is simple. Which just leaves the bench, Dan. So, coming off the bench then, loosehead prop, you've got a choice of Gareth Thomas or Reece Carey.
Reece Carey after this weekend.
Yeah, I would do the same. Look, we all know his strengths and we all know his weakness. And I think, you know, for me, that's that would be the right choice. And then I think Roberts is your hooker.
Yep.
And then I think for Tighthead...
this is interesting.
Dylan was great. Let's go Dylan. Leon hasn't played a lot of rugby lately. I would go Dylan Lewis.
Yeah, I think he gets it, doesn't he, after the performance that he put in.
Yeah.
For Cardiff.
Yeah. Seb Davis is your second row.
Yes.
And then you've got a choice then in the as your back row cover of Ellis Jenkins, Christianza, Jack Morgan, James Ratty. I'd be tempted to go with Morgan because it's X Factor. He won't. So I think Ellis
Jenkins. Yeah.
As tempting as it is to throw Morgan into the mix, I think you need experience in the ranks, even coming off the bench. And with that in mind, I go Gareth Davis as your scrum half cover.
Yeah, agreed.
Sheedy fly half or Anscombe. I can't see it being Priestland.
I have a feeling it might be Priestland.
Really? Who would you pick?
I am a big Priestland fan, as you know.
Mm.
Over there. I'm going to go Priestland over there. Can you see him picking Priestland as well?
I don't see the point in having Priestland in the squad, if I'm honest. I find it quite a baffling selection. Given his age and given the fact that you don't need four fly halves in the squad.
It's the wins, though, isn't it? They want he wants the best side that he thinks is going to win.
Then why hasn't he picked Reece Webb?
Well, that's...
He will go Sheedy. Yeah. I would go Anscombe.
Yeah.
But you're chief selector tonight, Dan, so you can have Priestland if you want.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with Priestland.
And then Halaholo is your back cover.
Yeah, off the bench. That's not someone you want to see coming off the bench, is it?
No, the only.
I think Ellis Jenkins will start, though, don't you?
Yes, yeah, I do. Yeah, I think it'll be. Yes, I think he will, but I think he might start seven with Moriarty. I don't know. I just wonder whether it might be a little step too far for Moriarty in Pivac's eyes, so he might go him off the bench. But yeah. We haven't got long to find that, Dan, have we?
No, not long at all, yeah. It's crept up nicely, isn't it?
Score prediction to finish?
Oh.
I'll give you mine while I'm waiting for those cogs in your head to go in. Ireland 34, Wales 16.
Really? We've got to get a win over there, haven't we? At some point. I can't see it being this time round. But... I always pick Wales to win, as you know.
Good man.
I can't remember when I last picked Wales not to win. So maybe I'll change it up this time. No, I can't. I can't, Jed. Can't do it. Wales. Wales by two.
After all that, you didn't even give me a proper score prediction, but that's fine.
Dylan Lewis to get a turnover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan Begger to kick it to win.
yeah, his tash has got in the way of got in the way of one of the Irish players somehow. He's got tangled up, and it's an incredible turnover. Bigger steps up, looks up to the sky, slots it over. Wales win.
Well, Dan, I really hope your version of events is the right one. Not just for the moustache story, but yeah, God, that would cheer everyone up if Wales was to get a win in Dublin. So fingers crossed you are right. We haven't got too long to go. That Six Nations gets underway next week. We'll have the squad announcement before then. So yes, Dan and I and I think the Mighty Murph will be back for next week to give you your Six Nations fix. And we'll look forward to that. Quick thanks, as always, to our sponsors, So Coffee Trades. You can get some great quality coffee at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.